sense. Because whatever you see, hear, smell, taste, and touch, you also know. So it's a sense which is common to all the others. And that was Aristotle. Somehow or other, since that time, in Western culture, we have lost our mind and abandoned our common sense, which explains a lot about the West. This is part of our heritage, but you know, I think from Christianity they decided to abandon that mind thing. But there is that sixth sense, the mind, and as you meditate, the energy goes into the mind, like I said this morning. Your mind gets stronger and stronger and stronger, which means a nimitta can appear much earlier and earlier because it's more powerful. Usually the five senses are so strong and the amplitude of the mind is so light, so you can hardly see the mind. But as you calm the five senses down, as you strengthen the mind, you get to that point, which that person did, the mind gets so strong, the five senses so weak, that the mind starts to appear. That's why you saw a beautiful nimitta. It's also because you were happy. If you're happy, that's another sign that your mind is getting strong. Happy, beautiful ocean, lots of kangaroos hopping around. It's like a Garden of Eden out here. It's a little paradise. Animals just doing their stuff. People doing their stuff. Beautiful feng shui. Seeing, those of you who know feng shui, this has got good feng shui, this place, because you see the ocean in the distance, and you're high up in the mountain. It's a great place for feng shui. Actually, I remember a friend who, you know, he had trouble with his marriage, and he went to see a feng shui master, you know, to deal with his marriage, and he told me it worked, because the feng shui master said the problem with his marriage was that the furniture in his home was not properly arranged. So when his wife was out shopping, he rearranged the furniture, poured it all against the front door so she couldn't come in. And there's no more problem with the marriage. That's a feng shui joke. You can swip around and say for the husband if you like. How can we be kind? So that's good. No. What's going on is just you're getting some with the meditation. How can we be kind to stray thoughts during meditation, yet stop them from returning? Oh, this is a good question, because this is what happens. You know, thoughts come in the mind, and what do most of you do? Stop it. Thoughts are bad. Bad thoughts. Keep out. And what happens? More thoughts come in. And you struggle with thinking. The whole retreat, the whole year, some people struggle for the whole life, and they still can't get rid of stray thoughts. And don't you realize you must be doing something wrong if it doesn't work? And the reason is you're trying to control them. When you control, you know, this idea of your mind being a lake, you're making more waves in the lake. Every time you do something, you're making more waves. So, thought coming in the mind, call that old karma. You can't do anything about it. Just let it be. Be kind, be peaceful, be gentle. It's just old karma. Don't make new bad karma by trying to control things and do things and get rid of things. Just welcome them. Accept them. Be kind to them. There is this story which I told a couple of people during the interviews. A classic meditation story. And it's also a classic psychology story told by the Buddha in the Udana and jazzed up in Open the Door of Your Heart. The simile of the anger-eating monster. A long time ago, an emperor was away on some business when a terrifying, ugly, frightening, smelly monster came into his palace. And he was so frightening that the soldiers froze in terror, allowing the monster to walk unimpeded right through the palace, into the central hall, and sit on the emperor's own throne. It was a monster, not the emperor. So all the guards, the soldiers, the minister, they came to their senses when they saw this monster sitting in the emperor's throne, what would you do if a monster came and sat in here and answered the Q&A in the evening? You say, get out of here. You don't belong. This is not your place. Get out. And of those few unkind words, the monster grew an inch taller, more ugly, more smelly, and the language got worse. And that made them so upset. They started threatening, pricking out swords, making sort of threats, what they're going to do if he doesn't get out. But every unkind word, unkind deed, or even unkind thoughts, the monster grew an inch bigger, more frightening, more stinky, and more offensive. And this had been going on for I don't know how many hours, when the emperor came back, and in his main hall, sitting on his throne, was this terrifying, ugly, stinky monster. So smelly was his odor that even the maggots crawling on his skin threw up. They vomited. They were sick. Not even maggots could take such a smell. So, what did the emperor do? He was an emperor because he'd been to Jhana Grove and Bodhidharma Monastery and listened to Ajahn Brahm on the internet, so that's why he's wise. He knew exactly what to do. Instead of saying, get out of here, you don't belong, he said, welcome. Thank you, monster, for dropping by and having a visit. You should have come here months ago. Why did you wait so long? Has anyone got you a cup of tea yet? Or how about some cheese or some chocolate? You may be keeping 8 precepts, I don't know. What type of tea would you like? You know, we have Dilma, what Ajahn Brahm likes, with condensed milk. Yummy. or we could have peppermint tea. It's good for your health. And what about something to eat? And at those kind words, the monster grew an inch smaller, less ugly, less smelly, less offensive. And so all the people in the palace, they realized their mistake. They were just trying to get rid of this demon through anger and ill will. So they all started to be kind to this monster. About 4 or 5 of them, they got round one of his feet, which was huge, and gave him foot massage. Oh, that, have you ever had reflexology? Well, the monks give me reflexology every now and again. Just over here. Oh, that's just so nice. We had reflexology. Oh, it's just there. Oh, yeah. Oh, thank you so much, said the monster. Another person said, how about some pizza? We've got a really good pizza joint here. So they rang out for pizza. Monster size, of course. And they were just so nice to this monster. And every kind act, kind word, or kind thought, the monster grew an inch smaller. And soon the monster was down to the size when he first came in. But they never stopped with the kindness. They laid on the kindness, the compassion, the service so much that soon the monster was so tiny, one more act of kindness and the monster vanished completely away. That's how they got the monster out of the palace. And the Buddha told that story, and he called that an anger-eating demon. And what a beautiful psychological insight that was. We have so many anger-eating monsters in our life. Stray thoughts is one of them. Get out of here, you don't belong. I don't want your stray thoughts. I don't want your sleepiness. Get out of here. And what happens? The problem gets bigger, smellier, and more of a problem for you. That is not the way to deal with such things. Having told that story, now you understand why I keep on telling you. Welcome, the stray thoughts. Thank you for coming to visit me. Is there anything I can do for you? Sloth and torpor, oh, thank you for for coming to visit me. Notice how much you want to take me to bed, have a nice rest, or would you rather just be sleepy here in the hall? Do you want to lean against the wall? How about on a chair and just really lean back? If you're kind to these things, they always get a little bit smaller, less of a problem. If you keep adding on the kindness, they disappear. You try that. And you'll be surprised. My goodness, the Buddha was right. And the reason is that all those stray thoughts, the sloth and torpor, is just old karma. Your job is just not to make any new bad karma. Ill will is always bad karma. Always gets bad results. Get out of here. You don't belong. I don't want you. I'm better than this. I shouldn't have this happen to me. I don't want this. That's bad karma. Compassion is always good karma. You open the door of your heart to whatever's happening. Thoughts come in. Whatever thoughts you want, just come in. And then no thoughts come in. That's what happens, because you're kind. There was the time, my sort of crazy story. I was over in Thailand, my sixth range retreat, the perfect monastery. The reason why it was a perfect monastery, you know, I was an English monk, it was in the northeast of Thailand, in the middle of a tea plantation. I had as much tea as I could drink. That was paradise for an English monk. So there I was, drinking tea, meditating, having a great time, up in the mountains, cool, great food, cave, which I love to sit in, and the first couple of weeks, really nice meditation. Then I started to get restless, and then I started getting really restless. And all these thoughts started coming in my mind. Now, I always loved being a monk. I like being a monk. I want to be a monk. But the thoughts which came into your mind was what I describe as unmonkish thoughts. Now, the sort of thoughts which monks aren't supposed to have. Now, thoughts of your ex-girlfriends. I wonder where they are now. You know, are they still free? You know, thoughts of romance. And thoughts of even sex and fantasies and stuff. Now, I was a good monk. I don't want those thoughts. So get out of here. I'm a monk. You know what happened? When I try to throw them out, they come back again with force. And it was such a struggle. Now, I wanted to watch my breath. Come on, watch the breath. Come on, watch the breath. And these thoughts would come in. Get out. Let's go back to the breath. Come on. It was so tiring and frustrating. Now, you are lucky because you got someone to talk to. I was by myself in this monastery. No teacher, no one to talk to. And it just got worse and worse and worse until one day I really thought I was going to go crazy. I just couldn't stop these thoughts. They were getting stronger and stronger and stronger. But, you know, I had enough good ideas to go into the main hall, bow to the Buddha statues, big Buddha statues, three times, and just say, help. And I got an idea come up straight away. And the idea was to do a deal. And the deal was I would allow myself to think any thought whatsoever, the weirdest sexual fantasies, romance or whatever, old girlfriends, from 3 to 4 p.m. every afternoon. 3 to 4 p.m. was my weird thought hour. Anything went. The rest of the time I'd behave. Because I thought, if my mind wanted to sort of think those thoughts, okay, do it from 3 to 4. The rest of the time behave. Sounded reasonable deal to me. But what happened was, it was still as much trouble. You know, my mind just wouldn't behave. But when it got to 3 o'clock, I had to keep the deal. And if I make a promise, I try and keep it. 3 o'clock, I went to my heart, leaned against the wall, because I was tired, I was exhausted. I said, okay, I've been fighting you all day. Now, if you want to think any sexual fantasy, the weirdest fantasy, which I wouldn't even admit to a pervert, you can do it. You know what happened the next hour? My mind watched every breath without missing one. Without any effort at all. It was a peaceful hour. And this is true, and I just can't believe, what the heck is going on? When I say you can watch, you know, any sexual fantasy romance, you watch the breath. When I ask you to watch the breath, you do all this fantasy stuff. What's going on? And as soon you realize, for that hour, I was just being kind, letting go, not fighting. just letting these things be. Whatever happens, it can happen. That's why my mind was peaceful. All the rest of the time, I was saying, get out of here, you don't belong. And the monster was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. The sinister said, welcome, monster, you can come in if you want. Then the monster didn't come in at all. It just vanished. And that's personal experience. And you probably have experiences like that as well. So that's why the compassion, the mindfulness, the kindfulness, that's what works in meditation. So if you have stray thoughts, stray thoughts, thank you for coming to visit me. So kind of you. Anything I can do for you? For that degree of kindness and peace, the thoughts just vanish. You are actually getting to the cause of the thoughts, not the thoughts themselves. You're not just looking at the symptoms, where they come from, which is a lack of contentment. Anyway, next question. Dear Ajahn, after your 6-month retreat, how do you go about learning to talk and learn to think again? Thanks. And did you have to see a speech therapist? Now, you know, all that memory was in there somewhere, but he just hadn't used it. So he just, that was where I was actually using will. And that's why I got a headache. I hate using will, but sometimes you have to. And so, you know, all the thing was in there, but you just have to force your mind to think. You know, someone would talk to you, you know, you just want to be silent. But that wasn't compassionate enough. They were asking you a question, and how were you? So you had to force your mind to get started again to think. And then once you thought, you could say something. So that was just, you know, how it felt inside after that retreat. You just didn't want to talk. You were just silent. You know, 6 months was beautiful. And so because of that, you really had to. So I remember the first talk I gave in Nolamara after my 6 months. Everybody was really waiting to see what I would say. And they were actually very disappointed because they thought I'd be crazy. You know, with big wide eyes and big long hair. So number one, I wasn't crazy. Because people like weird things. You know, just ordinary things is just, you know, boring. To see someone weird and really over the top and crazy, that would be quite cool. But no, it wasn't crazy, but very powerful. So, you know, the power of silence for 6 months is huge. And the hut which I did my 6-month retreat in, I never found this out afterwards until the monks actually told me. They were just almost like fighting a competition for who could stay in there after I left. Because they wanted to get off on the energy. And the monk who actually, you know, won and was allowed to stay in there afterwards, he went there to move in and he had to leave. He said he couldn't take the energy. The energy was too strong for him. It took a while, a couple of days, for it to sort of cool off. And then he could actually go in. Whoa. That was really good stuff. So it was really good stuff, that. And then, you know, places do have energy. For those of you who've gone to Bodhinyana Monastery, the hall there, that's really tight, good energy there. As I said the other day. So if you haven't had good meditation here yet, just go over there. Sit in that hall. That's really beautiful. People who haven't really had good meditation before can get good meditation there. And actually, we did get a proper Feng Shui master come once. And, you know, I didn't know. I wasn't here when he came. But the people told me afterwards. He went in the hall and he said, brilliant Feng Shui in the front. In the back is not such good Feng Shui. Because the good monks sit in the front. The scallywags sit in the back. And it's really got good feeling, and you feel that place. So yeah, things do have energy. Dear Ajahn Brahm, when the meditation is going all over the place, is it better to get up or continue sitting to want for the restlessness to subside? Thank you. If you're really going all over the place, just ask your mind what it wants to do. Say, mind, what do you want to do? Do you want to get up? Or do you want to stay here? Your call. So ask your mind. Better that way. Because then the mind will say, oh, okay, I'll stay here. The mind will say, oh, no, I want to get up. Okay, you want to get up? I'll get up. So you stop controlling. And if you do that, then your mind doesn't go all over the place in the beginning. It goes all over the place because you're controlling the mind, and the mind, when it's controlled, throws a tantrum. So again, just Oh, welcome, crazy mind. And then the angry eating demon gets less and less and less, and you get very still. Remember not to control the mind. Your job, again, in meditation is just to be kindful. Be aware and be kind. That's all. So easy to do. You can't always get nimittas. You can't always watch your breath. Sometimes you have thoughts. But you can always be kind. You can always be aware. Which means you can always meditate. That's what meditation is. Meditation is not what you're aware of. Meditation is how you are aware of whatever it is. And if you're mindful and kind, great, you're meditating. It's only a matter of time before the incredible nimittas, the beautiful lights and lottery numbers all come up. I've only got a few questions. I better be quick. You said that when all the senses are gone, then only the mind remain. Can you explain this a bit further? I find that my functions of the tongue, the taste and touch, seeking for comfort, is more strong. What is the skillful way to use these two senses? What does moderation mean for these two senses? Okay, what happens? You're calming everything down. Now, when things are still, they disappear. Any sound, like the hum of an air conditioner, if it's constant, you can't hear it after a while. Because the brain can only notice things which change. If you sit still without moving, you can't feel the body after a while. It's just not moving. You close your eyes. You may notice when you close your eyes, the first thing you see is the inside of your eyelids. But there's nothing much happening there, so the brain sort of turns off. The brain is very efficient and quite lazy. It'll only do things which it feels are important, things which are moving. So when they are still, you close your eyes, nothing moves, sight turns off. The sense of sight is not working anymore. You sit still, the body turns off. Nothing moving there. You know the smell, taste, as long as no one farts, then the smell, that's actually why in traditional Buddhist temples they like lit incense. Because of all the beans and stuff they ate in those days, all that chili, all that durian, you needed that incense there to keep the smell down. But people are much more hygienic these days, so they don't need incense. So as long as it's a constant smell, constant taste in the mouth, as taste of your saliva, those senses turn off very easily. The two which are very hard to turn off are sound and, again, physical feeling. That's why we try and sit in a quiet place. And remember, try and be a burglar as you come in here so you're not disturbing anybody. And physical touch, that's a difficult one to turn off. But what happens? We sit as still as we can. And then the only thing moving is the breath. You can't stop breathing, otherwise you're dead. But what you do, the breath gets so calm because you're reasonably still, you don't need so much oxygen because you're not doing very much. So the breath quite naturally gets very calm and still. And by being in the moment, in-breath and out-breath start to appear the same. When it starts to appear the same, that's when it can disappear. Because there's nothing really different between the in-breath and the out-breath. It's a constant flow, it seems. Then the breath vanishes, and with the breath vanishing, that's the last part of the body gone. And that's usually when nimitta arises. That's when you see the light. It's just letting go of the five senses, which is an important part of Buddhist meditation, which I'll tell you later on when I deal with the insights. So this is actually how you let these things go. And with moderation of the senses, that's, you know, when you do have to use them. You know, we try not to excite them too much. That's why, you know, we have like the eight precepts of not wearing ornaments and not dressing up, not trying to sort of excite other people with your dress or with scents or with other things. Because when we don't excite our senses, they very easily calm down. Food has to be delicious. Sometimes when I thought that, okay, let's make food sort of bland. Let's get all the food which people bring every day. Put it in a big pot, or even better, a trough. Stir it all up. And then, you know, instead of using plates, you can actually line up next to the trough and just eat as much as you like. That'll be moderation in eating, wouldn't it? I tried that a few times, you know, stirring everything up in your bowl. But what happens? You get indigestion. And it's not nothing to do with the food. It's the fact is that when you have delicious food, saliva comes out, bile comes up, all this other stuff which is necessary to digest food only is secreted when the food is tasty. And that is why, you know, you have to, even in monasteries, you know, the cooks are always told to try and make the food tasty. Otherwise, you can put it in your mouth, all these digestive juices just don't get secreted, so you don't digest it. It's just, you know, cause and effect. So even the Buddha said, yes, you know, it's okay to have delicious food, you have to, otherwise you get indigestion. So that's one of the difficult senses. But we just eat once as monks, or once or twice, and have done with it, which means in the afternoon, in the evening, you don't have to indulge that last sense, you've had enough to eat. Is it true that fear, stress affects your body and mind, that the damage that causes is irreversible? How can we fix it? Everything is reversible. It's just like life is reversible. You know, you just, as you get older, you lose your teeth, you lose your hair, you lose your memory, you get just like a kid again. Some of us are almost there. So it is reversible. Fear and fear is the interesting thing about life. We are such a fear-ridden society because fear gives us a bit of a buzz sometimes. We like going to the scary movies. People, even in Indonesia, one of the words I learned in Indonesia, Bahasa, was the word for ghost, hantu. And you know what? I learned that word simply because people love ghost stories, and they love ghost movies. Oh, why do you love ghost movies? Because we like being scared. We like fear. That's why we go in these adventure worlds, where you go in these death drops. Scare the gomayang out of you. So why do we like being afraid? It's a lot of times it's because we are... What we're really afraid of is actually afraid of peace and stillness. Weird as human beings. So at least when we're afraid, we are there, we exist. When we are still, we disappear. So this is actually the fear of disappearing. Fear of not existing, fear of not being. And this is one thing I'll tell later on in deep meditation. The deeper you go, the more you disappear. And that's scary. I'm not here anymore. I better do something to show that I still am. But the stress affects your body. Stress affects your body and mind. It's so easy to overcome stress. You just let go. And all the stress of the day, you can feel the whole body relax. And all the stress of your life, the past and the future, you can just let the whole lot go. If you want to know how to let go of the past, the let go of the past, I tell this every time when I teach a retreat. Standard psychology, you have to admit the past first of all. Bring it up. And the best way of bringing it up is to write it out on a piece of paper. All the stuff which you really keep on thinking about. Who did something to you? Or what you did to others. All the time you've been cheated, abused, let down. And what stuff, you know, you look at the past and think, ooh, this is terrible stuff. Write it down on a piece of paper, first of all, to acknowledge it. Bring it up. And the best piece of paper to use for this is what we call toilet paper. And write it down in brown ink. Because psychologically, that gives you the association that what you're writing down from your past is similar to the other thing which goes on toilet paper that is brown. And because you make that association, that pain, that trauma, those guilty stuff of the past is the same as the other stuff which goes on toilet paper, straight away you're telling your mind in the deepest level, this should not be kept. No one, even those who belong to Greenpeace, the World Wildlife Fund, who try and help the environmental sustainability of our world, even they do not use both sides of the toilet paper. If you only use one side and you've got the other side, it's still fresh, still be able to be used. You don't put it in your pocket to keep for the next time you go to the toilet. Although you think there's a purpose for that, because then you don't use, you only use half as much toilet paper. How many of you only use one side of the toilet paper? You environmental vandals. No, one side is enough. Even a small amount of brown stuff on that piece of paper, you want to throw it away. And the same with the brown stuff of your past, which you put on the toilet paper. So it makes an association. This is deserving of you throwing away, letting go. And then you take the paper to the letting go place to do the letting go ceremony, which is the toilet. You read it in the toilet once more, all the terrible stuff on brown toilet paper, which you've done. And then you put it in the bowl and you do the letting go ceremony. You press the button, whoosh, and the toilet paper goes into the sewers, taking with it all your bad memories from the past. It actually works. That's why after these retreats we usually have to get a plumber in to unbox them. No, we don't. Our toilets are pretty good. But you can try that. It works. So that way you can let go of the past and be free. Oh, I'm not going to be finishing time today. I was told that one can achieve enlightenment in just one lifetime. How do we know how close we are? You are closer than you think. Each one of you. Who knows? It is important to visualize all chakras emanating their right color when meditating, or by keeping your mind still and thinking of nothing would do the work. Yeah, just think of nothing. You're much better. That this applies to visualization of white light of protection around us. Any color light will do. White light, orange light, blue light, pink light, it doesn't really matter, because the color is not important. The brightness and stability is. And if you visualize that light as protecting you, it will protect you. This is powerful stuff. Whatever you visualize it as will work. If you visualize it as healing you, it will heal you. Would it be a correct statement to make that if the mind is still, one can still shift position, cough, etc., without having to move the mind? Every time you move the body, you move the mind a little bit. You do disturb it. So it means your mind is not totally still yet. If it really was still, you wouldn't even feel the body. So it's not totally still yet. So every time you move, you do disturb the body, but only a tiny bit. And you soon get back to the stillness you were before you coughed. But if you don't cough and try and hold it in, that when again you do to the volcano cough, then you really disturb the mind, and also many other people's minds as well. Which is why it's okay to move, it's okay to cough, it's okay to scratch or to sneeze. It does disturb the mind, but a tiny bit, and you soon get back to where you were before the cough. So that's why it's good to adjust the body and to move. Please explain the difference between unconditional love and metta. They seem to be very close. Indeed, they are the same. Tomorrow's talk will be on compassion and what it really is. So I'll do more of that later on. Thanks for your talk this morning. Can you please explain compassion again and how this is different from loving kindness? This is weird. Different handwriting, same question. And this happens every time. When I actually answer these questions every retreat, there's always a bunch of questions come together almost exactly the same. Did you write this question, or was this some energy come into this room to make two of you ask the same question? Is this coincidence, or is something going on? Okay, they said the mango keeps dropping out of my hand but feels smooth. So they're sitting in the tree, they open their hand, but the mango keeps falling out. You haven't got a big enough hand. Your loving kindness is not big enough. Okay, how can I get pop songs out of my head? I like ABBA, Britney and Madonna. But I don't think they will help me deepen my meditation practice. If you want to get a pop song into your head. Simon and Garfunkel. The Sound of Silence. We did a fundraiser once. It was mean. And no, she had a, not a band, had a sort of like a string quartet there, you know, very high class. But then, you know, they stopped and they said, Ajahn Brahm, you know, this is a fundraiser for this place, Jada Grove. You know, can you sing a song? You know, to raise money. And they put me in a spot, you know, because raising funds for a good cause, and they wanted me to sing. And they said, we'll pay you a lot of money if you sing. So I said, okay. And they thought, wow, we've got Ajahn Brahm to sing. He's never sung before. It's actually breaking your precepts. You're not allowed to sing. So I said, I will sing. Simon and Garfunkel, oh yeah, great, we like Simon. And I said, Sound of Silence, and then I shut up. Unfair. So how do you get pop songs out of my head? I like Abba, Britney and Madonna, but I don't think they will help me deepen my meditation practice. If that's the case, go for a walk outside in the bush and listen to the sounds of nature. It's called substitution. Listen to more beautiful sounds than Abba and Madonna or whatever. And the sounds of nature are those sounds. Listen to the sound of the wind rustling the leaves. It's a very light wind around here these days. And if you go and you just about listen to the sound of the wind. Listen to the sound of the birds. Now, sounds of nature are very calming. And the best thing about them, they soon stop. They don't leave a residue in the mind like pop songs do. So substitute the sounds of music still in your head with the sounds of nature. And when the sounds of nature stop, so will the other sounds in the mind. Can you please explain the meaning behind eating only two meals? You eat only two meals, you eat three meals. Look at me, I eat only two meals and I still get fat. So imagine if I ate three meals, I'd be just dead by now. The reason we only eat two meals, it's enough for you. If you look at history, human beings are not meant to eat three, four, five, six meals a day, like they do in Singapore and Malaysia and many other Asian countries. So maybe sometimes you arrive there late at night. You arrive there late at night and you go through the streets and restaurants are opening at all hours of the night. I remember I was giving a retreat conference in Malacca, and lots of people from the BF, you know, they went to Malacca because Malacca is well known for food. So, I mean, they weren't really coming to listen to me. That was just the excuse. And I know this happened because, you know, we finished off about 9 o'clock, 9:30, the talk, and I went to bed. And these, you know, BF, about 30, 40 people, they were supposed to go into the temple to rest at night. But what did they do? They didn't go into the temple. They went to a restaurant to eat. And they didn't come back till about midnight. And apparently the temple was all locked up. And so it had these members from the Buddhist Fellowship in Singapore climbing over the monastery walls at midnight. And that's how I found out. How many times do you have to eat? But anyway, in history, we only used to eat twice a day, maybe 50, 60 years ago, morning and evening. There wasn't any lunch. We have a bit of a breakfast in the morning, and the main meal was always in the evening. Go back earlier in civilization, it used to be one meal, and it was always in the evening, after work, you know, tilling the fields or whatever, then you'd have a big meal together. And that was it. If you go even earlier in history, you know, in the dinosaur times, you'd have a meal just maybe once every 3 or 4 days whenever you could catch a mammoth. And that was it. So this, you know, eating so many times a day is only a very, very modern innovation in human culture. You don't need to do that. And the reason we only eat sort of in the morning time is because, you know, you eat a lot in the morning, you may be a bit sleepy, have a rest after lunch if you want to. But then the whole afternoon, evening, night time, you're free. And all the blood is not digesting the food. All the blood is free to go to your brain to meditate and have no sloth and torpor. It's just this beautiful long time you don't have to worry about eating, so you can meditate. That's why we do it. One of the sutta mentioned mind over mind, tongue on the palate, teeth clenched method. Please elaborate on this, as the energy required to this must be infinity. Yeah, that's the last option when you're really desperate, but it usually doesn't work. That is the willpower method, when you clench your teeth. I've got these terrible defilements. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to press myself. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. And then you go and do it, whatever it is. Yeah, it doesn't work, does it? So no, trying to control yourself through willpower never works. Wisdom power is the way. So that's why I always say, not willpower, but wisdom power. That's the way of Buddhism. The Buddha was such a compassionate and wise person. He never wielded a stick. He never threatened to send people to hell if they didn't behave. He didn't need to do that. He had a much more powerful, wise way of doing it. Wisdom power and kindness power. That is what is far more effective. And that's far more effective in life as well. You try and control your kids by shouting at them or beating them or whatever. All they'll do is learn how to not get caught next time. Use wisdom power and kindness power, and that is far more effective on training others and also training yourself. Remember my father once telling me, he was a very good example to me, he once did many things and took me aside once. He said, "No, never steal anything. If you really want something that badly, you're going to take a chance and steal from somebody. Just ask me and I'll buy it for you. If you really need it that badly, you want to steal, then I'll get it for you." And he was such a poor man. I realized, my goodness, he really, really, really wants me to stop stealing or never steal. And he would find the money somehow or other. And if I needed it that badly, I was willing to steal, he would get it for me first. And that just stopped any thought of stealing ever. When I realized how important it was to my father not to steal, he would sacrifice everything to stop me stealing. And that wisdom, compassion power, that was much, much, much more effective than threatening me. If you steal anything, I'll beat you, I'll put you in the room, I'll take away this and take away that. That would not work. But the wisdom, compassion power, that was powerful. Sometimes I feel a weariness in my body, especially on the neck area. What can I do? What you can do is take out the neck, get it amputated, so you don't have any weariness. And we don't need a neck for it, just put the head straight on the shoulders. The neck is just the hubbest part of the body. What's the neck there for anyway? So if it's really weary, take it off. You always got to think outside the box. So, okay, especially in the neck area, pain in the neck. So, I didn't say you were a pain in the neck, I said you have a pain in the neck. So, if you have a weariness, I was saying this to a person earlier, that they're getting old or a bit sick, and their body is always yucky. And that's the same with my body, it's yucky. When I start meditating a lot of the time, I sit here and it's just yucky. It hasn't got the softness and the fitness of when you were young. And I'm aware of it. But what I do, I just stay with that yucky feeling. And I'm kind to it. I do kindfulness. It's so easy. I stay with it and it's not a very nice feeling. It's not an unpleasant or hurtful feeling. It's just old age. Just stay with it. And just, you don't try and get rid of it. You're just kind and open the door of your heart to it. And then it just vanishes very quickly, a minute or 2 minutes, and it's gone. The body feels nice and relaxed. Kindness gets rid of the anger-eating demons. Get out of here, I don't like you. You change your attitude, and it's really beautiful. So, welcome your weary neck. Thank you for coming to visit me, weariness. I love you, weariness. You can stay with me for the whole life. If you welcome it in kind, it disappears. If it doesn't disappear and you complain, it's because you weren't accepting it. You're trying to get rid of it through kindness. You don't get rid of it through kindness, your kindness, and it disappears. Dear Your Emptiness, please advise how we can watch our breathing without influence or affecting it. Thank you. Yeah, how you watch your breathing without affecting it is through kindfulness. Again, here we go, the same word. Because if you really are kind, you don't control anybody. I can watch you, and if I'm kind to you, I don't interfere with you. I just, go on, very good, carry on. Whatever you're doing is great. And that's what you do with your breath. Breath, wonderful, carry on. Whatever you're doing is great. You've been breathing in and breathing out all my life, and you haven't failed me yet, so I'm not going to interfere with you. I trust you. Go on, carry on breathing. My job is just to watch, not to interfere. The best way of doing that is just don't even try to find the breath. Don't look for it. Just make peace, be kind, be gentle. Just do exactly as I said by opening the door, opening the lotus by kindfulness, aware and kind, and soon later just the breath appears. When it's ready. You don't go looking for the breath. You don't go focusing on the tip of the blooming nose. You don't go and just say, I've got to breathe in and breathe out and count this and count that. You just do this method of just being in the present, just being mindful, being kind. You're just in the present moment, you're silent, and before you know it, the breath is there. It just comes to you, you don't go searching for it. When it comes to you, it's always peaceful. When you go looking for it, you really interfere with it, and it's never peaceful. It takes a while to relax and make it peaceful. If you allow it to come to you, it's always peaceful from the very beginning. That's the best way of meditating. You spoke this morning of the doing and knowing minds. How do you work with these in everyday life? How do you do it? Because you've got to work in life, but do you ever get tired when you're working? Do you ever get exhausted and feel so tired and you've still got lots more work to do? And what do? You just carry on using willpower to get through. That is stupid. Instead, when you feel tired, you've had enough at work, let go and put more energy into the knowing by stopping doing things for a little while. There's one guy I know who does the 1 minute meditation every hour on the hour at work to stop doing things to give his mindfulness a bit more of a boost of energy. So at his desk, he closes his eyes for 60 seconds and does absolutely nothing and meditates. When his boss passes, he sees him with his eyes closed, and he thinks, oh, he must be contemplating the contract. And no one knows what you're doing when you've got your eyes closed. They can't read your mind. And if that doesn't work, the other person is they go and do meditation for 10 or 15 minutes. When they feel really stuffed and they can't really do anything, they go and meditate for 15 minutes in their office building. And the best place to do that is in the toilet, in the cubicle. Because no one will disturb you in the cubicle. Even if you've got a boss from hell, you can just say, oh, no, I've got, digestion problems, I'm constipated. You're not lying because your brain is constipated. That's why you're going into the toilet cell to meditate. And at least you get a bit of peace and quiet in there. So you can relax. And the point is that if you let go and put some energy into mindfulness, stop doing for 15 minutes, that 15 minutes you spend away from your workstation, you make up later on with greater efficiency. You do more work in less time with greater quality. Now that's actually how you do this. I told this in Indonesia just before I left for Indonesia. I got a letter from my favorite rabbi in Perth. I gave a talk at the Jewish school in Perth, Carmel, just before they did their end of year exams, the year 12 exams for going to university. He wrote to me to say their exam results were better than ever thanks to what I said. I told the kids the day before you start your examinations, for goodness sake, don't study. Relax, let go. Put some energy into your knower instead of doing things. Because when you go in front of that examination, you've got to be full energy. And if you keep studying the day before, the night before, your knower will be just so dull, you won't be able to perform well. And he wrote to thank me, said it worked. And I didn't write back, but if I did, I said, I told you so. Last question before we go to 10 past 10. Saliva tends to accumulate in my mouth during meditation, so I need to swallow often. This disrupts my meditation. What can I do? It's a very simple answer to that. If you go to the dentist shops, you can actually get this machine, which sucks the saliva out when you're meditating. And that way, you don't have any problem with saliva when you're meditating. I think we should get one of those machines for anyone who has saliva problems. You put it to your neck, you... So that way you can meditate without any problem in the future. No, for goodness sake, just swallow. And don't think about it. What happens? You swallow a few times and then it stops. And if that doesn't work, I'll get one of those machines for you. Okay, well, if that doesn't work, stop drinking water. Then you've got a dry mouth, you dry up, you won't have any saliva problems. You may die, but at least you won't have any saliva problems in the future. Okay, please excuse me for going quickly through those last questions, because I went a lot through the early questions. So if I didn't answer your question as thoroughly as it deserved, it's just because you haven't got good enough karma yet. Nothing to do with me, not my fault, but don't blame the management, it's your fault, as usual. That's what I say, on this retreat, if you do have any complaints, anything which is wrong, please see Dania, the caretaker, or Bianca, the manager. So their complaints. Any compliments, please come and see me. Oh, I shouldn't say that, sorry Dania. But they've got all compliments all around, you see. Okay, so the end of the talk this evening. Three big you-know-whats. Sadhu. 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 Very good, so have a great night. Meditate some more if you want, here or over in your heart or on the stupas, but please, no trying to touch the Buddha inside of you. Okay, good night.